Oh, sorry, we've lost captioning.
Is the captioning off again?
It's back right now.
Okay, thank you.
I guess nobody's starting. I will.
Hi, I'm Susan Lindsay,
and I think it's very interesting the conversation I was listening to about the view corridors, because I'm here to talk specifically kind of about the same thing in a different perspective, and that is I'd like to request a kind of a revisit on the allowable heights on Southeast 12th and 11th, looking west. Because many of us who have lived for a long time in the inner southeast actually enjoy the view of the Portland Hills. And the new plan will allow for a 125-foot hard limit. Right now there's a 50-foot there with, I'm talking about from Southeast Morrison North to Burnside Street. So if we could just sort of, I don't take up a lot of time here, but it is a concern, and unfortunately it was one I've had a kind of an ongoing family tragedy this summer, and I wasn't able to kind of deal with it as much behind the scenes, and I thought I'd wait till council, but we're very concerned about it. We're talking, you know, 10 or 11 stories right there across from a single story or a historic neighborhood on the other side of 12th. So I'd like to revisit that height if we could. Thank you so much for your time.
Thanks for being here.
Susan.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. My name is Heidi Moore. I'm a vice president at AltSource, a locally owned and operated custom software development company. We provide development, production, and testing of computer software to other businesses. We are currently rehabilitating a building located 1120 Southeast Madison to use as our future headquarters. Our attorneys submitted a letter into the record, and I will not restate those comments here, but wanted to offer some additional comments on the issue from our perspective. AltSource started in 2004 from our basement in Northeast Portland, and we've continued to double its staff size every year, and we're on track to double again. We currently employ over 90 full-time employees spread across three different buildings in the Central East Side District. The ability to expand our operations at the future AltSource headquarters is vital to the continued growth of this company, as the inner Southeast location is a key factor in recruitment and retainment of highly talented and highly compensated high-tech workforce. Additional height restrictions may force us to restart a search for a long-term home for AltSource elsewhere, most likely outside of the city of Portland, rather than expend additional money on improvements that will only serve the company's short-term goals. For these reasons, we strongly support the Planning and Sustainability Commission recommendations.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Philip.
15 minutes. Go fast. Take the power.
Thank you, Philip. Thank you, Philip.
Carla, since the minutes, the captioning was not captured this, is there a way to save that document to make sure? Oh. Okay, before it gets deleted.
Thank you, Lauren. Okay. And if that's all, that's all I had noted. So we'll go to the regular list. The first three are number one, four, and five, Terry Dublinski-Milton, Angus Duncan, and Joe Courtright. And they will be followed by six, seven, and eight, Aaron Brown, Stephen Siegel, and Charlie Tso.
All right, very good, folks. And 2 minutes will go quickly. Thank you.
It will. Handouts.
Go ahead, Terry.
Should I go ahead and start?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'm Terry Dublinski-Milton. I'm testifying for myself. I am supportive of the Central City Plan. I would like to offer a couple amendments. First of all, the Gibbs Street overpass ends in a dead-end three-story elevator. It is not good for large numbers of bicycles. It can be clipped off and then an extension like a Copenhagen snake to connect to the West Side waterfront path to handle higher levels. And if we got really creative and wanted to open the Ross Island Bridge, we could carry it over the river, but I know that's aspirational. I'm highly, highly supportive of the Green Loop, but we have to, with the Green Loop, connect to the outer neighborhoods and have extensive, high-quality access all the way out to I-205. Now, the Rose Quarter expansion. I am in support of it, but because of several amendments, one particular one I think is important. I agree with Saltzman. You're going to hear a lot about congestion pricing. It's important. But I think we need to take this into account, preparing for the big one, seismic upgrade. Okay, when the Cascadia subduction zone snaps, 405 is going to be collapsed, all the overpasses are going to be gone, and the Marquim is probably going to be standing in midair. So if you look at the map, what we need to do, in my opinion, is do a study of moving I-5 over to 405 and then removing the East Bank Freeway. This would allow for a redesign of all the interchanges to getting to Lair Hill on the south waterfront. It could create a slip lane from the tunnels to the Ross Island Bridge. You could create a max bypass connecting PSU to Goose Hollow, which would cut 20 minutes off the commute from Clackamas Town Center to Beaverton Transit, and no transfer. Call it the Purple Line. And then we could remove the East Bank Freeway completely and open up the river to the east side for the first time in a century. So I would offer you an amendment that you put this study into the Central City Plan as predicated on the Rose Quarter expansion. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. My name is Angus Duncan. I'm president of the Bonneville Environmental Foundation here in Portland, and I chair the State of Oregon Global Warming Commission. And while I would like to, I ultimately can't argue that urban planning has to be all about climate and greenhouse gases, but it has to. These have to figure centrally in those kinds of plans and always have in the plans that the City of Portland has adopted. Nationally and in Oregon, we have shifted our electric utilities, our largest sector, onto a course to lower their carbon content in energy solutions. This council participated materially in our efforts to do that, and I think successfully, and the State of Oregon is grateful to you for your intervention. Nationally and in Oregon, though, unfortunately, transportation emissions are up. They've always been the largest sector in Oregon. They are now the largest sector nationally in emissions, and we understand why. It's the end of the recession. People feel flusher. gasoline is less expensive, people can drive more, and the consequence, and they can also drive larger cars, and the consequence is that for every electric vehicle that entered the fleet last year, approximately 80 SUVs, internal combustion SUVs, entered the fleet. VMT in both nationally and in Oregon are up, and there is a modest but disturbing shift from central city growth to suburban growth. So we need to deal with that. Planning needs to address its housing and transportation factors combined. The 2017 transportation bill from Salem, I think, helps us materially with transit, bike, pedestrian solutions, and with electric vehicles. It also addresses congestion, but ambivalently, offering both congestion pricing authority and new freeway lanes. The council and the state of Oregon need to figure out how to deal with those. I just offer one observation from our historical experience in the electrical industry, and that is we have learned the lesson time and time again. Apply demand-side solutions, reducing demand. First, it's much less expensive and much more effective before you go out and build something.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon.
Joe Courtwright with No More Freeway Widening. Expanding urban freeways has never solved traffic congestion. That's the one eternal verity of urban transportation that we know. In the extreme, Houston has expanded their Katy Freeway, so it is now 23 lanes wide. Less than 2 years after opening a $3 billion freeway widening project, travel times on that freeway were 50% longer than after they had expanded it. Even in the case of this project, ODOT admits that this will not solve what's called recurring or everyday traffic congestion. They hope it'll reduce the number of crashes, which are mostly minor, but it's simply any additional capacity is going to stimulate more traffic. This is a terrific way to waste $450 million. Now, Commissioner Saltzman has offered something on the order of a compromise of doing both of these things, of moving ahead with pricing, which we strongly think would be a good idea and is the only solution that's proven to reduce congestion, and that to also do this project. That is a recipe for wasting $500 million. Let me give you the example of Louisville, Kentucky, which did pretty much exactly that. They had a freeway, not unlike I-5, that connects it with northern suburbs. It was six lanes wide. They doubled the size of the freeway bridge. And to pay for that bridge, they tolled that bridge between $1 and $2 each way. And after they tolled that bridge, the traffic on that bridge dropped from 120,000 vehicles a day, virtually the same as the I-5 bridge, to about 60,000 vehicles a day. It dropped by about half. So tolling, if you spend money on new capacity and then toll it later, you run the real likelihood that you will not have any demand for the facility that you need. So the critical point here is there is no reason to go ahead with this proposal, even if you think it might work, until after you have implemented and observed the effects of tolling, because that will show you that you do not need to spend money on this project and that you can relieve congestion by charging a price.
Perfectly timed. Thanks, Joe. Thank you all. Next three, please, Carla.
Are Aaron Brown, Stephen Siegel, and Charlie So, and they'll be followed by 9, 10, and 11, Tony Jordan, Kim Marks, and Izzy Armenta.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mayor Wehler, Portland City Council. My name is Aaron Brown. First, disclosing myself as a registered lobbyist of the No More Freeway Expansions Anti-Highway Industrial Complex. First, highway freeway expansion has never solved traffic congestion. You're going to hear that frequently today. Second, a short story. When I was in college, I spent a couple years living next to a Super America. It's a Midwestern equivalent to a plaid pantry. As an Oregonian unaccustomed to humidity, I found summers really brutal. It didn't take me long to learn that this convenience store sold 48-ounce slushies for 50 cents. You can imagine the joy accompanied by the opportunity to walk less than a block to spend less than a buck on nearly a gallon of corn syrup and ice. If someone had asked me 10 years ago, perhaps, I don't know, the Oregon Department of Slushies, if I was willing to spend a lifetime supply of sweet, refreshing slushies, a card to have slushies whenever I wanted for a low price of $450 million, I'd certainly have considered it. Now, you and I know it's entirely possible that my demand for these slushies might have been, say, induced by its heavy subsidy, my proximity to the convenience store, my youthful ability to enjoy empty carbohydrates with reckless abandon. But maybe I'd take a couple nutrition classes in college and learn I needed to significantly alter my habits to be healthier, like a diet change. Maybe I decide I'm done with corn syrup. A vision zero for corn syrup, in which I really decided I can't have corn syrup anymore. Maybe I'd want to buy slushies in other parts of town. There's some cool slushie shops opening in other parts of town that actually have had historic disinvestment of people to buy slushies from. In any circumstance, I would have to be absolutely certain I really wanted a $450 million card to buy slushies at my local Super America. It means I wouldn't care about my health, wouldn't care about any of these other things. So the question before you, Mayor Wheeler and Portland City Commissioners, how certain are you that you really want to buy a $450 million slushy card? You know how difficult it is to raise money. $64 million for the gas tax, $250 million for the affordable housing bond. This is seven times the gas tax, twice the affordable housing bond, for a project that, again, has no demonstrable benefits that they are ostensibly claiming to be provided. I hope that you are certain enough, and I hope that the 375 community members who have signed our letter, including the public health groups, social justice leaders, neighborhood associations, and environmentalists, I'm wrapping up, I promise. I hope that that has sowed some doubt before you eventually turn around and give that $450 million to the Oregon Department of Slushies. Please work with the community to help us buy something other than corn syrup. Thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon. Thank you for that testimony,
which is very entertaining. I challenge anybody else to live up to that. But secondly, thank you for not sending me 375 identical things just for putting the petition together and telling me that there's that. It's very helpful to be able to see how many people are supporting and also not to have one's emails completely buried by the same email hundreds of times. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Commissioner Fritz, this isn't our first rodeo. We've learned how to work together, so thank you for your support.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Steve Siegel. I'm here on behalf of the Downtown Development Group. In our written testimony, we've asked for four amendments to the Central City Code. I'll focus on two or three of them, depending on time. The first issue deals with the undersupply of transferable FAR in the West End. The West End is about half the size of the Pearl District and the town downtown district. It contains disproportionate amounts of surface lots, which are prohibited from transferring FAR. Underutilized parcels, which will not transfer FAR, and a disproportionate amount of historic landmarks, which can only transfer FAR after seismic upgrades. The city identified an undersupply of FAR in the University District and fixed it by allowing transfers from the downtown district into the University District. We ask that the same thing be done for the West End. Second issue addresses a site that we own on Southwest First, abutting the Morrison Bridge ramps. The proposed plan prohibits parking access off of Southwest First where the light rail operates. On this site, Southwest First divides. The light rail dips under the bridge ramps while a auto circulation lane stays at grade. That auto circulation lane is not only at a different grade, it's also physically separated from the light rail alignment. We ask that parking access be allowed subject to an adjustment off of that portion, that segregated portion of Southwest First, and by doing so, it will be able to avoid having the parking access on Southwest Second, which is a city bikeway. Another issue I will raise is the height limits on the block directly north of the Galleria. That block had its height limits reduced because of a viewpoint, which is not iconic. It's a new viewpoint. The city's own analysis rates it as isolated, remote, lack of access. And as a result, a swath of height through downtown is reduced, including on this site. And this site is particularly important for the city because it is a site of a anticipated major mixed-use development that's supposed to anchor the west side of the retail corridor. Thank you.
Mayor, can I just ask a
Commissioner
question?
Commissioner Fish, you bet.
Thank you for laying out the four amendments. I want to go back to the West End for a second. So you're asking for an adjustment on the current limitations on the transfer of FAR?
Yes, we're asking that, similar to the University District, that FAR can be transferred into the West End from the downtown district.
What would be your view, if the council fashioned some kind of amendment that allowed some transfer of FAR, provided it was to a building that was residential and where the inclusionary housing requirement was met on site?
Well, I don't know that I have a problem with that amendment in and of itself. However, it doesn't solve another problem, which is those buildings that might be mixed use. I mean, one of the objectives of doing the West End plan 15 years ago, I was involved in that, was to make it
fair enough. Mixed use. And of course, the inclusionary housing requirement is only a percentage of the residential. But I appreciate you laying out some concerns you have. I would like to get some feedback from you at some later point about whether this could be done in a targeted way that ensures we get more housing with inclusionary housing investments made on site and not in lieu.
Yes, Commissioner, we'll get back to you on that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Please go ahead.
Good afternoon. My name is Charlie So. I'm a member of Portlanders for Parking Reform, and I'm also here with No More Freeway Expansions Coalition. I'm here to tell you that urban freeway expansion has never solved congestion. Numerous research studies have shown that adding more road capacity results in more driving. This phenomenon is called induced demand, and it makes freeway widening projects fruitless by eroding new capacity. In 2015, the California State DOT publicly acknowledged that widening freeways inevitably creates more traffic. Research shows that a capacity expansion of 10% leads to an increase in VMT by 6% to 10%. So why does adding capacity create more traffic? When driving is inconvenient because of congestion, many people respond by driving in off-peak hours or on alternative routes or traveling by different modes or not taking the trip altogether. So when we add new capacity to make driving easier, we're incentivizing people who previously make other choices to avoid congestion to drive on the freeway during rush hour. So what is the alternative to investing $450 million in a freeway widening project? Well, to ensure that our existing transportation system is working efficiently, we need to implement congestion pricing. We also need to invest in affordable options like public transit and bicycling. The transportation is the second largest household expenditure after housing, and we need to make living in Portland more affordable by enabling people to not depend on driving. We are at a crossroads here today, and we have to decide what kind of city Portland will become in the future. Will we build more freeways and let our city be choked by cars, or will we take rational and responsible actions today to ensure that Portland remains livable and affordable? For these reasons, I urge City Council to take the I-5 Roads Quarter Expansion Project out of the Central City Plan. Thank you.
Thank you. Next three, please.
Are Tony Jordan, Kim Marks, and Izzy Armenta, and they'll be followed by 12, 13, and 14, Stuart Emmons, Walter Weiler, and Dan McFarling.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I'm Tony Jordan, the founder of Portlanders for Parking Reform, and I also believe that urban freeway expansion has never solved congestion. Our planet is convulsing. We're drowning and burning at the same time. Our federal government is in denial, and our children are looking to us to take responsible action. Against this backdrop, we're considering a 20-year plan that expands highways and builds more parking garages. This is not a responsible action. This plan, in its action plans, calls for public resources to build or incentivize more car garages in Chinatown and Central Eastside Industrial District. These garages will be full of stalls that are very expensive, $50,000 or more if we take the convention center as an example, and we'll be paying for them for decades. These are no-win garages. If we meet our mode split and climate goals, we won't generate revenue and we'll lose a lot of money. If they are full, that will signal that we failed in our more important climate goals. Prosper Portland and PBOT say the garages can be converted to other uses. I say prove it. I ask the council to require that any garage built, leased, or purchased by the public be 100% convertible to active uses, housing, offices, retail, not storage. I also ask you each to think deeply about the message that this building these garages send and the legacy it would leave. Mayor Wheeler, you've been outspoken on climate, and I really appreciate that. And you're also the commissioner for Prosper Portland. If you think that these garages are the right thing to build, I challenge you to name them after yourself. So in 20 years, Portlanders can look upon the Ted Wheeler parking garage and determine if it was a good investment or wonder why we're still paying for something that no one uses and that undermined our climate goals for 20 years. So please remove the amendments in the action plan that call for more structured parking and require that any new public parking be 100% convertible to active uses. Thank you.
That was very clever. Well played. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. My name is Ken Marks. I'm the director of transportation equity for the Rosewood Commission, or Rosewood Initiative. Excuse me. Rosewood Initiative supports the concept of value pricing or congestion pricing on the I-5 corridor, as long as there are mitigations for low-income people. However, we do not support the expansion of this corridor.
Mayor, the captions are off.
Yes. I'm sorry?
Sorry. The captions are off. We have to
They're probably switching at 3:30.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay. Are they off?
Almost.
They're back on. I apologize for the interruption.
No worries. We believe that the monies from congestion pricing can be used for other purposes as long as there are, again, mitigations for low-income people. Yesterday, I testified in support of the Growing Transit Communities Project, which you approved. We also talked about upgrading 148th and 162nd so that they would be accessible for people using public transit and create north-south transit corridors. Earlier, a couple weeks ago, I believe it was, you also approved the Enhanced Transit Corridors Plan. In both conversations, the question kept coming up, how can we pay for these plans? Congestion pricing on the I-5 corridor and on I-205, I would add, can help pay for these projects and then some. A couple numbers to think about when thinking about how to spend $500 million or $500 million. $500 million would buy, if I may, 500 linear miles of sidewalks, 5,000 crosswalks that are signalized depending on the amount of treatment, and 1,000 buses. That's a lot of effort towards safety. That's a lot of effort towards reducing congestion. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for your testimony.
Mayor, I'm going to claim naming rights for the eco roofs. Thanks for that, Tony.
That's good material.
Yeah. Did Izzy Armenta, did I get them?
Exercise.
Izzy Armenta, number 11. We'll go with Stuart Emmons, number 12, Walter Weiler, and Dan McFarling, 12, 13, and 14. Thank you. And they'll be followed by Bob Solinger, Mary Coolidge, and Jim Labby, 15, 16, and 17.
Stuart, why don't you go ahead, please?
Okay.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. Well, it's nice to be here. We are Portland. Our history of progressive urban ideas is impressive. We are a city with a level of livability that is the envy of many U.S. cities. We're growing. We might have 600,000 new residents in the next few decades. Our freeways are already clogged. Finding affordable housing close to where people work is more and more of a challenge. Freeway expansion is hugely expensive and proven not to reduce congestion. Mobility is a large component of our livability. We need to prioritize mass transit and bikes and not add freeway lanes. The $500 million for the Rose Quarter is a terrible investment in our future. The money should be reallocated to four things. One is to make mass transit faster, like going underground in downtown, and increase service to East Portland. 2, to improve bike and pedestrian safety and increase bike lanes. 3, congestion pricing that is equitable. I'm very concerned about congestion pricing for people who are have lower incomes in outlying areas. And 4, a long-term plan to get I-5 off our Central East Side waterfront. Please reallocate all funds dedicated for freeway expansion in Portland to improve mobility, improve livability, and improve our environment. Let's do a Portland solution. Let's not add a $500 million freeway lanes that's only 1 mile long for too little lanes. Let's add bike lanes. Let's add mass transit options. Thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Nicely done.
Thanks.
Mr. Mayor, ladies and gentlemen, commissioners, thank you for this hearing and thank you for your dedicated service. It is recognized and appreciated. I'm Walter Weiler. I'm an owner of property and resident in the West End. My comments concern the South Park blocks, a unique oasis and treasure of Portland's pedestrian-friendly culture. This green walkway deserves special protection as it ultimately becomes a key segment of the inspirational Green Loop. 2 suggestions. Move the South Park and bordering blocks into the West End Planning District, thus removing this sensitive oasis from the high-density plans of the central city. 2, limit building heights bordering the park blocks to 75 feet for reasons of sunlight, density, and preservation of park blocks' peaceful, welcoming neighborhoods to avoid the creation of a park in a canyon. Thank you for considering my suggestions. That is my 1 minute story, and I'm sticking to it.
Yeah. Very good. Thank you, sir.
Good job, Walter.
The next 3 are Bob Solinger, Mary Coolidge, and Jim Labby, 15, 16, and 17. And they'll be followed by Michael Alina, Ed McVicker, and Sadefumi Uchiyama, 18, 20, and 21.
Bob, on behalf of the council, we want to express our condolences about your VW bus. It had a good run.
Tragic.
Thank you.
It had a good run.
I suppose in the scheme of things, the loss of a VW bus to a fire is a very small thing these days, but sad nonetheless. Good afternoon. My name is Bob Solinger. I'm the conservation director for the Portland Audubon Society. We participated extensively in the development of the Central City Plan, served on a couple of the committees. We're excited about this plan. It's been a while since the City of Portland has really brought forward new innovative green initiatives. We're a national leader, but we've been in sort of a slow period in recent years, and this includes some really exciting things. Bird-friendly building design, reduced light pollution, expanded greenway, district tree targets, green loop, and a green roof mandate. We submitted extensive comments on this plan. We urge you to support all of those things, but we're also asking you to consider a few amendments that we think would make them stronger. I'm going to highlight a couple, and then Mary Coolidge from Audubon will highlight a couple more. The first is the greenway expansion from 25 to 50 feet. This is absolutely essential to meet our ecological goals, our access goals, and our recreational goals. But unfortunately, that expansion doesn't come with any mechanisms to actually get existing development when it redevelops out of the greenway. It's likely, and most of it, that those second 25 feet are already developed, it's likely that those will continue to be developed over time unless we either put in regulations or incentives to encourage people to move back. And so we're really urging you to consider including some sort of mechanism to do that. The second thing that I want to highlight is the green roof mandate. We support Commissioner Udaly's recommendation amendment to expand that to 100%. 60% really is too low. We also encourage you to bring back the incentive program for buildings under 20,000 square feet that are not covered by this mandate, and to focus primarily on projects that have an equity component to them. It's important that we get green roofs on all of our structures, and I think the incentive program for buildings under underneath 20,000 square feet would be very helpful. Finally, we are a member of the No New Freeway Coalition. We strongly oppose the expansion of the freeway. I want to focus really on the climate change impacts and on the air pollution impacts and on the equity impacts. This is not consistent with our equity goals, our climate change goals, and it diverts funding from places that really do need it. So we strongly encourage you to go beyond simply the congestion pricing and to eliminate this project altogether. Thank you.
Thank you.
So is it Audubon's position that solar installations and eco roofs can coexist?
Absolutely. All the data shows that actually they are not only compatible, solar panels function better on top of an eco roof because of the cooling effect that they have.
Thank you.
So they can go together. Thanks.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
I actually think I'm up next. Good afternoon, Mayor and Commissioners. My name is Mary Coolidge, and I work for Audubon Society of Portland. We applaud the inclusion of a bird-safe glazing standard and exterior lighting standard in the Central City 2035 plan, which demonstrate the city taking steps to ensure that we are maintaining the ecological integrity of our urban landscape. We strongly support the establishment of a new bird-safe exterior glazing standard to address window strike hazards on the glassiest buildings in the Central City. Window collisions are among the leading killers of birds worldwide, and across the United States, strikes account for up to 1 billion deaths annually. As Portland grows and develops, it is important to address the ever-increasing hazard of unmarked glass, especially in light of glazing increases designed to activate ground floor uses. Adoption of a bird-safe glazing standard is consistent with the city's green building policy and will help meet comprehensive plan policies calling for bird-friendly building design. The Central City Plan also includes requirements to limit light pollution along the Willamette River Greenway. While we appreciate this step forward, we would like to see the city take a more significant step to comprehensively address the growing issue of light pollution in our region. There is a large body of evidence demonstrating that artificial light at night has negative impacts on human health, fish, wildlife, and plants. Poorly designed, inefficient lighting also represents tremendous wasted energy and obscures stars that migrating birds rely on to navigate. The cumulative impacts of light pollution are not limited to areas along the river, and addressing light pollution across the entire Central City is critical, given the amount of development that is projected to occur in our city in the coming decades. We urge City Council to take a step forward to apply best management practices in exterior lighting to the entire Central City in order to meet comprehensive plan policies, climate action plan goals, and to minimize a broad range of unintended health, safety, and ecological impacts. Written comments submitted yesterday by Audubon Society of Portland reflect specific recommendations for expansion of the exterior lighting standard. Thank you.
Thank you for your time. Appreciate it. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mayor Wheeler, City Council. My name is Jim Labby. I'm here today as the new interim director of DePave. DePave is looking for a new executive director, if anyone's interested. I hope to save some time. We want to second the comments from the Urban Forestry Commission Policy Committee and Audubon Society of Portland. We're also signature to the No More Freeways Expansions Coalition as an organization. It's dedicating our sweat, blood, and tears to removing unnecessary pavement for people, wildlife, and water. We really are disappointed to see unnecessary pavement going in, especially with so little results to expect in the new freeway expansion. There is a lot to support in the Central City Plan, and we thank you for that. It could still go a long ways to really achieve the aspirations of in the new comp plan that envision a new relationship between green infrastructure and the built environment, really for public health at its core. We really appreciate and support Commissioner Udaly's amendment to expand the eco roof requirement provisions. And we've submitted written comments. I would just want to highlight the issue of the canopy targets in the Central City. We really feel like they fall short and accept the existing limitations without aspiring to something larger in terms of what we can do. And especially the opportunities are particularly fruitful in the public right-of-way. And I think if the council moves forward with the public right-of-way task force, interbureau task force that you're going to be looking at in November, we can start looking at those opportunities. There's a lot there we can do to expand the urban forest canopy. The last piece I wanted to really emphasize is removing those exemptions in Title 11 for the commercial industrial lands that were meant to be temporary and really allow, they allow the extension of really toxic neighborhoods by given everything we know about what trees and how they function for public health, not requiring just the basic standards in Title 11 to the entire city is to continue to allow that. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Thanks all three of you.
We're going to go back to number 14, Jim Howell, and we'll do Ed McVicker and Sadafumi Uchiyama, and they'll be followed by 22, 23, and 24, Burton Francis, Wendy Rahm, and David Dixon.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I have some testimony that handed out. My name is Jim Howell. I also agree that expanding freeways does not solve congestion, but public transit does. The transportation system plan and the central city plan do not address the travel needs that are of commuters that are not destined to downtown. Most jobs in the metro region are outside the central city, yet interregional commuters must travel through it if they choose public transit. These commuters will continue to drive around downtown on crowded freeways because taking buses or MACs through downtown will continue to be slow, crowded, and unreliable, and MACs lacks capacity for future growth. The interlockings at the approaches to the Steel Bridge are at capacity today. Max needs an additional river crossing and must be able to bypass downtown streets if it is to meet the public transit needs of the future. Unfortunately, these vital needs are totally ignored in the TSP and the CC 2035 plan. An east-west Max tunnel between the Lloyd District and Goose Hollow with subway stations at Rose Quarter and Pioneer Square, plus a north-south bike Max viaduct across the inner east side connecting the Rose Quarter to the Max station at OMSI could provide this infrastructure. The cost would be substantial, but probably no more than the cost of the proposed Southwest Corridor project with its many flaws. Ridership growth on TriMet peaked 3 years ago. Last year, it dropped 2%. Fewer people are riding buses than they did 20 years ago. And ridership is even dropping on MAX. Meanwhile, traffic congestion is increasing on both city streets and freeways at an alarming rate. Why, then, is a freeway expansion the only significant transportation project in the CC 2035 plan? The I-5 Broadway Widener project proposed by ODOT will be a total waste of taxpayers' money because even with much-needed congestion pricing, it does not provide an alternative. And since it's beginning, I won't talk about the alternative. There is one, but I say until an alternative analysis is completed that models the comparative costs and benefits of each mode in the corridor, please eliminate this project from the plan. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Good afternoon.
Hi there. Thank you, Mayor Wheeler and Commissioner Udaly, Fritz, and Fish for the opportunity to speak before City Council today. My name is Michael Elena, and on behalf of the Portland Japanese Garden, as a volunteer and trustee on the board, I would like to address the CCSW's 06 view corridor as proposed by the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability. In testimony before the Planning and Sustainability Commission, I felt our message and request for a protected view corridor for the Portland Japanese Gardens view of Mount Hood, looking east from the Garden Pavilion building, was misunderstood. To that end, the BPS approved a truncated view corridor which does not address the potential impact of trees in the environmental zone between Southwest Sherwood Boulevard, going east to the South Reservoir in Washington Park. On behalf of the Portland Japanese Garden, I am asking that the current view corridor, as described by BPS, be amended to extend the Portland Japanese Garden's view corridor through the environmental zone between Southwest Sherwood Boulevard to the South Reservoir in Washington Park. The Portland Japanese Garden requests this change because we believe the mature height of western red cedars and Douglas firs can reach well over 300 feet. That potential will impact the view looking east from the pavilion in the garden to Mount Hood. We look at this issue from a perspective of 150 to 100 years out. Please refer to the attached drawings, which illustrate current recommendations from BPS and the garden's request for the corridor extension. A protected view corridor, including this extension, is instrumental in our ability to protect one of the most iconic views in the city, a view that is near and dear to hundreds of thousands of Portland citizens and visitors to the Portland Japanese Garden every year. We appreciate your support and assistance in moving this cause forward. It is an unselfish pursuit whose intent is to preserve a treasure for all time. Thank you.
Michael,
very good.
If I could, Michael, thank you for the presentation and the materials. And I had an opportunity to go up to the Japanese Garden and actually see for myself what you're proposing. And I have to say, and the mayor now has offered an amendment, which would meet this objective. I'm hard-pressed to find a reason why we should not support that. But I'll be listening carefully to testimony, and when the planning staff comes back, I have some questions. This does not give you license to do anything. This just creates a corridor so that there are opportunities to manage the view. And I do believe that this particular view corridor is one of the treasures of our city. And it ought to at least be protected so that the Japanese Garden and other stakeholders can have a say in how it's managed. But I'll be interested to hear if there's any opposition to this from any of the public testimony.
I would as well. And I want to reinforce the fact that we're doing something looking 100 years out. We want to protect this for generations to come.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay. Was there an Ed McVicker? Okay, he's number 20. And we'll go with Sadafumi Uchiyama and Burton Francis. And they'll be followed by Wendy Rahm, David Dixon, and Rick Kasky, 23, 24, and 25.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thank you for the opportunity to speak today. My name is Ed McVicker. I'm a resident of Portland in the Crestwood edition. I'm also a volunteer at the Japanese Garden. I'm on the board. I go there once a week and clean the moss, and I've grown to love the place. I'm here to support and give a big thumbs up to the amendment that you offered, Mr. Mayor, and feel that it's a wonderful opportunity for us to include in our planning process for the next, as Michael said, 100 years. I think more than 50, because that seems more manageable to me, but it's still a wonderful opportunity to help us plan for the future. Incidentally, I would also like to support Mary Coolidge's notion about birds and the idea of non-strike whenever possible, avoiding that, or at least mitigating that as much as possible, and also the light pollution issue, not very often spoken of, but highly important. So with that, I say thank you for your hard work and your consideration.
Thank you, sir. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. My name is Sadafumi Uchiyama. I'm a private citizen and the garden curator of Portland Japanese Garden. I just don't want to take any more time, so I would like to support Mike Arena's testimony. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. We appreciate your being here. Thanks for your great work. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. My name is Burton Francis. I'm a resident of the Pearl, and I'm an attorney. Oregon State Planning Goal Number 1 mandates that land use actions must occur through a broadly representative cross-section of affected citizens in all phases of the planning process. And yet, according to the Northwest Examiner analysis, 24 out of the 33 West Quadrant SAC members were developers, architects, or other related interests. And also importantly, I think it's important to point out that few actual residents of the central city were a member of that SAC. So the composition of the SAC was not broadly representative, but it was rather heavily skewed towards the development interests that are financially directly benefiting from the activities of that SAC and from the economic changes that occur from this plan. An ethics complaint was filed, as you know, regarding the West Quadrant SAC, and the ombudsperson found that the SAC members are public officials and thus required to disclose conflicts of interest. And the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability attempted to rectify that failure by requiring after-the-fact disclosures. Yet, as recently stated by one of the SAC members, And I quote, the issue was not simply SAC members voting in their own undisclosed interest, but actively advocating in their own interest for increase in height on properties that they controlled without any disclosure, either before or after. So since there was no transparency in the face of quite robust conflicts of interest, the process itself produced recommendations that are irredeemably unscrupulous. So regarding after-the-fact disclosures, the facts as set forth in Plan Volume 6, Attachment B, show that almost 10% of the SAC didn't even respond to the after-the-fact disclosure request. So the remedy didn't work. Thus, the conflicts are not even of non-disclosure, that they didn't even dignify this council with disclosure, are a complete unknown. They can't be fathomed. So I would request that the council reject and redo the West Quadrant portion of the plan because of those unfathomable unknowns that can't be corrected by the council. I would just add that I wholeheartedly endorse the mayor's two view corridor proposals. We could call them the Wheeler view corridors. That's fine with me. And also, Commissioner Fritz, I endorse your step-down proposal. If you remember my prior testimony before this council, I am a big fan of that design criteria, and it's very centrally set forth in all the design criteria that we have.
So, thank you.
Thank you. Have you compiled a map of which particular properties in the West End you feel have a conflict of interest on them?
There has been some work done on that. I haven't done it myself, but I know that it's out there. But my request, and I'm glad you asked, my request would entail that I think to do a complete do-over is unmanageable, and we got to move forward. But I think that if there's a two-step remedy where there's an investigation that identifies those things, right, and then there are recommendations that say, well, despite that, they still make sense, or there are alternatives,
That
would be the true remedy of this situation.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that suggestion.
Thank you. Thanks, all three of you.
The next three are Wendy Rahm, David Dixon, and Rick Kasky. And they'll be followed by 26, 27, and 28, Richard Lowenstone, Andrew Plambeck, and Shelley Romero.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I'm Wendy Rahm, a West End resident and a board member of Architectural Heritage Center Bosco Milligan Foundation. Over the last 5 or 6 years, I've attended most of the meetings of the Central City Concept Plan and the West Quadrant Plan. There was no voice for the West End on the West Quadrant Stakeholders Advisory Committee, also called the SAC. More important, there were serious conflicts of interest on the SAC, as was confirmed by the Ombudsman's finding. In my view, this is serious enough to call for creating a new committee with a higher percentage of Central City residents and excluding non-Portland residents to review the flawed conclusions contained in this plan, especially regarding building heights, FAR, vistas, and unmet open space needs of the West End as it densifies. Most important is that the maximum building heights in the West End need to be lowered to 100 feet. The result will be to discourage demolition, encourage rehabilitation and reuse, both of which will help preserve a large number of existing affordable housing units in the district, a top priority today. See examples of affordable housing on pages 2, 4, and 5 in my detailed recommendations. This area is also dense in pre-1935 buildings whose architecture tells Portland's story. As award-winning West Coast writer Wallace Stegner said, if you don't know where you are, you don't know who you are. Place is not a spot on the map. The West End's distinct sense of place consists of over 100 vintage Northwest buildings. The West End has been praised in national travel magazines and newspapers as a unique place worth visiting. There is economic value in its sense of place, never quantified in the height calculations for this plan. And Portland is known for its historic vistas, most of which disappear in this plan. Please consider reviewing the conclusions on these topics prior to final approval. And I would also like to add, I support Wheeler's view corridor amendments and Commissioner Fritz's bridgehead and Commissioner Udaly's green roofs, for sure, and Mary Coolidge's light pollution and bird
amendments.
Wendy, can I ask you a question?
Yes.
First of all, do you have a position on any of the proposed naming opportunities?
No, I wish I did.
Just kidding. The, Dan's not here, so take,
I know,
if you feel free
I know.
To.
He can have the freeway.
Yeah, well, there you go. But I would put your name on something.
So I want to, since you're the second person that's talked about the process question,
yes,
and then how it affects what
yes
we're doing. First, I want to let you know that my colleagues and I are working on a comprehensive update to how we deal with boards and commissions at the city.
I am aware of that.
And it is going to include new requirements, training, mm-hmm, ways of tracking things. Mm-hmm. And it frankly was long overdue and has been informed by a number of examples that we've looked at. So I don't want you to think that's fallen on deaf ears, because I do think there's some things we need to do, standards we need to establish. I also think we need to do a better job of training, creating uniform bylaws and,
right,
and giving the volunteers the tools they need to be successful.
Absolutely.
It's not just on them. It's on us, too.
Yeah.
But I want to go back because we're going to hear from time to time people say, well, because there was a conflict of interest, we should start over. You may agree or disagree with this, but let's say there was someone on the committee that had an undisclosed conflict and cast a vote. The concern that we have as a policy matter is that person may personally benefit from something they're acting on, and we don't have the benefit of knowing that, okay? So that is something that we need to curb in the future. But the recommendation that person's voting on, whether a building should have 100 feet or a setback should be 25 feet or whatever, those things to me feel like more objective kinds of standards that we're going to grapple with. And so it may be that someone supports